Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. We are going to finish our conversation that we had with Ken Cousins. He's the one that's setting up a new society. He figured out how to decouple himself from the United States and set up a new society where they have immunity, much like the David Williams, where he's prime minister of his own country. They're doing the same thing, but they're doing it in the United States. And they have about 900 people that they're working with. And he gives us reasons. And we keep talking about it. If you haven't heard the first episode, go to my website, sarahwestall.com, and you can get the first episode there. But I'm really interested in how they're doing this and why they're doing it. So it's a really insightful and interesting interview. Again, sarahwestall.com to get the past interview or hear any of my other ones. David Williams is another really good one if you're interested in this topic. So let's get back into that interview now with Ken Cousins. You have created Gemstone University to educate people on the realities of our history and how to empower yourself to change your circumstance. So basically, it's about empowerment. One area you teach is to change your status. What does that really mean?
Okay. Well, as I have been using the phrase, bonded surety, that is our current status. Okay. Let me ask you something. Do you personally, have you had any interaction with any of the law movement, the things, a lot of it's out there now, just any and all of the myriad things that are on the internet? Have you looked at any of that?
I'm not exactly sure what you're asking, but I've interviewed like David Williams, who's a prime minister of his own country, and we've been talking about self-determination. Mm-hmm. And I've been involved with the law just in a business sense on multiple levels. So maybe that's what you're asking.
Well, that's helpful. But what I was asking is specifically, like when I talked about commerce and debtor-creditor relationship, things like that.
I understand that those words and terminology.
And people use the phrase straw man. Have you ever heard that?
I've heard it, but maybe you can help the listeners and everyone understand what that means in this context.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's start with understanding commerce. I mentioned the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, and then debtor-creditor. So, for example, if you sell me your car and say we agree by contract that it's going to be $5,000. And I say, I can give you $1,000 cash, but I need you to carry a note for $4,000. And you agree to that. So we enter a contract and I'm going to take your car and drive it around. You need to be protected, right?
So you use your car as collateral to the bank.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And you also want to make sure it's insured. You know, when you go to the bank, you do the same thing. You know, I'm going to take $1,000 to the dealer. I want you to give me a $4,000 loan. It's the exact same thing. And they have requirements. It has to be insured, and it has to have an attachment so that you can collect on the collateral. In the bank situation, they'll do a repossession. But if it's a private agreement, the way you would protect yourself, if you understood commercial law, is you can file something called a UCC-1 financing statement. Have you ever used or seen any of those in mm-hmm. business?
Well, I built a multi-million dollar company, and I had a multi-million dollar facility and all sorts of stuff. Ran into some really crooked bankers and a very interesting situation. So there's a lot of these terms I know, but the listeners might not. So without being boringly simple, you know, refer to some of these things and then get into, you know, because people need to know what you're talking about.
Sure. Well, in the United States, every state has a Secretary of State. And in that office, he has what's called a business portal. And if you want to create a corporation or an LLC, you go to that office to get permission, basically, to be authorized to create a commercial or corporate entity, such as an LLC or a corporation. When you do that, you have used the United States and, say, California legal system to have permission and authority to operate a business within their system. Their system is commercial in nature, and that means that it's going to create commercial paper, such as loan documents, money, currency, and many other things that are considered monetary instruments in our system. The money in your pocket, the Federal Reserve notes, are a commercial instrument. There is a debtor and a creditor. You can see that by seeing that there's two signatures. If you look at a dollar or $5 bill or whatever, you see the signature of the Secretary of the Treasury and the Treasurer of the United States. Those are two different bodies. One is a debtor and one is a creditor. Okay. When you and I do that car sale, you will have me issue a promissory note for $4,000. And to make it valid within the enforceable system, because you're going to want to enforce it if I don't make the payment, what you would do is you'd file a document, which is a notice of debtor-creditor relationship in the office of the Secretary of State in your state. And that would be the UCC division. And what I mentioned is a UCC-1, which is a financing statement that has three primary components: the name of the debtor or debtors, name of the secured party or parties, and the collateral. Okay, that locks in that debtor-creditor relationship. That's a very simple explanation. The entire system, from the Federal Reserve and its relationship to the United States, because when the United States went bankrupt in the corporation I mentioned in 1933, which was March 6th through March 9th, FDR came into office on March 4th, and he put the banking and monetary system into a three-day banking holiday on the 6th, and he issued a proclamation called number 2039. And he said there will be a bank holiday and there will be certain things that will operate temporarily during that holiday for 3 days. But then on March 9th, Congress issued its first act. That was the 73rd Congress. And you can look it up, first act, 73rd Congress, called the Emergency Banking Relief Act. To make a long story, a complex document, very short, it gave the president unlimited emergency powers to protect the money and banking system and to put everything into an administrative process to maintain and manage the bankruptcy of the debtor corporation called the United States. Okay, that's called reorganization. I'm sure you're familiar with bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And there's two forms, basically. Liquidation, where you give everything to the trustee and they liquidate the assets and pay off the liabilities. Or reorganization, where the debtor remains in possession and can reorganize to pay off the debt. Okay. So the United States was put into reorganization.
And that's how they have control of us for the last few hundred years.
Well, 80 years since 1933.
Okay, but what didn't happen right away, too, with the forming of our country?
Yeah. Yeah, the original United States of America and the United States, and those are different. In 1781 through 89, certain things were put in place. When you ask about what's the real history, we're told that, you know, the Declaration of Independence happened, and then we fought a war, and we won that war, and then we created the United States of America. It's much more layered and complex than that. But the historical record is very clear. You can see it in black and white in the documents, that when the Declaration took place, the 13 free and independent states, which were how they were called in the Declaration of Independence, came together and formed a union. And that union was a confederacy, which means a federated or organized union of independent sovereign body politics. So Maryland and New York and New Jersey were societies or sovereign body politics that came together and created a union. In the Articles of Confederation that memorialized that was ratified and accepted in 1781, It says the style, which means the name of the union, shall be, in quotes, the, with a capital T, United States of America. It also said that union will be perpetual. Okay. It did not say it's a republic. It said it's a union in a confederacy relationship. In 1782, a year later, and also that the Articles of Confederacy created what's called the United States in Congress Assembled. Okay, so it created a national identity called the United States and gave it powers through being in Congress. And that's why the wording was exactly the United States in Congress Assembled. So that's an individual sovereign body. From 1781 till 1787, it did a number of things. In 1782, it bonded itself to the debt that had accrued to the states by borrowing primarily 18 million gold livres, which was a lot of money back then, from France. Okay, so supposedly they borrowed the money from France to fight England. But then in 1783, they signed what's called the Treaty of Paris. And in that Treaty of Paris, it refers to George III as having multiple personalities, basically. It uses the plural, referring to his divine heart, things like that. And it says that he is the King of England and the King of France. France that helped us fight England, he was the king of both of them. Okay, this goes back to the Hundred Years' War with Joan of Arc and so forth, where England basically took the crown. So France did not remain a sovereign, truly independent. There was a separation between the crown and the body politic. And that crown was held by George III. So are you following me?
Yeah, it's like having another corporation under a corporation, like a corporation and then multiple businesses. Yeah.
Correct. Exactly. Exactly. It's a hierarchy. But there's a difference between the crown and the monarchy and the body politic. Okay, so it's like a parent company with a corporate subdivision and multiple auxiliaries. Or
you can have a whole bunch of businesses under a parent corporation.
Sure, and that's what we've got. In fact, in this world, there is only one corporation. Everything else is a subdivision. And that's called the crown. Okay. So now the United States in Congress assembled bonds itself to a debt in 1782. And the first payment is due in the summer of 1787. Okay. So then in 1783, the United States in Congress assembled enters into a final treaty of supposedly a peace called the Treaty of Paris, in which George is identified as those same King of England, King of France, also a Duke of certain duchies or principalities, which root back to the Habsburg dynasty and the Venetian nobility, which is where the rooting of our true controllers of the banking system really comes from. So he was the head, the titular head of the banking systems. He was a Habsburg, or he was actually a Hanoverian. So he was a Hanoverian king, but he was controlled by Habsburgs and Hanover and Venice. Okay. So he's the Duke of Lunsburg and Brunswick. And then it says he is the arch-treasurer and the prince-elector of the Holy Roman Empire and the United States of America. Okay, but wait. I thought the perpetual union was called the United States of America. But here's where just little tiny increments of the language are twisted to create layers of distortion and obfuscation. Because in the Articles of Confederation, in quotes, it said the with a capital T, which means formally that's part of the name. In 1783, in the Treaty of Paris, the is just the normal article referring to an entity called United States of America.
Now, if everybody in the world thinks it's different, how do they get away with it? I mean, how many people know what you're saying?
Not very many. But yes. let me give you the punchline. Okay. So the punchline is this. So when the United States in Congress assembled, defaulted on its bonded agreement to that debt of 18 million gold livres to France, then the king, George III, could come in and force them to capitulate, which is what the Constitution actually is. The word Constitution is based also on a word constitutor, which means a party who takes on the debt obligation of another party. So you have the debt obligation of the United States in Congress assembled, representing the 13 free and independent states, which borrowed that money in the first place to fight the war. Now they're in debt to the king, and the king says, okay, fine, I will let you exist, but we're going to reconstitute, and we're going to create a new entity called the Federal United States of America and the United States, which is going to take on that debt. And I wouldn't go into it because it would take us 20 minutes, but that's, I could show you exactly in the Constitution where that is. The interesting thing is that, so the United States of America, which is owned by King George, who is the Prince Elector and Arch Treasurer, and let's explain that. Prince Elector means, in the Holy Roman Empire, which we are also in, who controls the land. Because only electors can control the land. Okay, that's where the Electoral College comes from, who elected the president as electoral qualified electors. Okay, they were all under a hierarchy under the Prince Elector, under the Holy Roman Empire, which goes back to 800 and 900 AD, and a guy named Charlemagne and a guy named Otto the Great, and which was the beginning of the First Reich that became the Third Reich in Germany, which ultimately was intended to be the Fourth Reich in the United States of America as a corporate fictional debt body bonding all of the world's people. Okay.
So who's in charge of the crown right now? The highest point, the highest organization. Who is in charge of that? Who's the leader?
The Vatican.
The Vatican. Now, is it the Pope or is it the Black Pope?
Yes.
That's, you're saying yes to both.
Of course. Okay. Because look at Masonry. What is one of their primary symbols? The checkered black and white floor. You look at Westminster Abbey and all these big cathedrals in Europe. You look at many buildings in Washington, D.C., they have black and white checkered floor. The esoteric meaning of that is we play both against the middle. We do not take sides. We'll be England fighting America, lending America through France. France is the good guy. We're the bad guy, lending them money, but it's all to a purpose, to progress history to where it was directed, to where we're at today, to create this global world system of hierarchical control and bonded, monetized debt.
Okay? So are the popes cognitively aware that they're trying to create debt enslavement?
Yes. Okay. I mean, again, this
case. Because that's a big answer, you know, sure. That they're purposely trying to do this.
Sure. But when I go back to, and nothing is homogenous anymore, it's all breaking up. I mean, if we went through history, you either went along with the program or you were eliminated, period. Okay. Lots of popes were killed and poisoned, lots of dukes and kings and princesses, you know, mm-hmm. princes. They were all killed if they didn't follow the party platform. Okay. That's breaking up now. You know, you have the CIA and the NSA, and you've got FBI, and you've got other bodies, law bodies, law enforcement, and so forth. They're not homogenous. They're not all black. They're not all white. So that opening and that separation and that revealing that I mentioned at the end of the first part is about everybody's basically being forced to reveal themselves. Now, this gets into multidimensional things that I don't think we should get into in this session. We're basically laying the framework of world history, the construction of everything in a monetized hierarchical structure to perpetually bond the human population. But as I said, that's breaking down. So you see someone like Francis, who is a Jesuit, who some say is wearing both hats, black and white. He's doing things that are facilitating the reorganization or transformation. You know, he issued that letter. For example, that apostolic letter that I mentioned, okay? which is binding. And we use in our documents, in our communication, and we have not, you know, everything I'm doing, we're doing is building sort of a crescendo to a certain point, to perfect what we've talked about, perfect the absolute validity and cognizance of the private society, out of which many private societies are being birthed and can be created, creating that receptacle as a private standalone jurisdiction that is not out of the world. Obviously, we're interacting through the banking system, the money system. But see, then also you see what's emerged in the last 6-8 years, the cryptocurrency reality. Okay, you can see how that's being co-opted. I watched last night some of your interview with Cliff High, you know, who is an expert on the matrix and the monetary system. He talked about 40-year bonds going to zero and all those wave patterns that we call the money system in equities and bonds and Wall Street and all the rest of it. Those are like they follow a wave pattern of a frequency based on the projection of consciousness that I talked about earlier. Cliff is an absolute expert at that. He's an expert in being able to track and watch the real-time emergence of that creation or manifestation through his webbot and predictive of understanding and so forth. But that's the program mind-controlled, entrained reality that we've been in. It's not the nth degree and end-all of reality itself. We have a capacity and an ability to break away from that. And as I said earlier in part one, to move into a different creation and start creating it free of the debt, free of the attachment, free of the bondage, so that we are not limited in our creation. And so cryptocurrencies have emerged as a tool. You can also watch how they're being co-opted back into the system, how they're forcing a lot of them to co-opt into, you know, banking compliance and things like that, but not all of them. The key there is jurisdiction. If you're operating a cryptocurrency as a corporation or an exchange platform as a corporation, you're bound by their rules. You are using their franchises to monetize, and the IRS has full jurisdictional capacity to move in and regulate and control and tax and all the rest of it.
Well, you've created a bank in for your new society that is free from the IMF and the World Bank, from what I heard, I think. Can you explain that? Because that's a pretty big deal.
Sure. Yeah, that's a little two-dimensional to say that we're free. We are jurisdictionally, well, first of all, as I said, fundamentally a private society can create its own law form, jurisdiction, court, bank as its own private treasury. As long as it operates in the private, it is not jurisdictionally attached. But we still use the entire world banking system. This is part of what I've mastered and what we teach people to understand, that most people think of a singular entity, like what you said, you were successful in business, you created corporations and they own subdivisions or auxiliaries or wholly owned subsidiaries and things like that. I use and teach people how to create a multi-layered structure in which entities still conform to the domestic law form that they may operate within. So if you have a bank within the world system, you have to comply with the banking rules and so forth. There's no hidden secret where you can go, you know, if we moved to an island, we created our own monetary form and had nothing to do with the rest of the world, yes, it would be truly free and independent. But that's not possible in this world. And second of all, we wouldn't really get anything done. I want to be in the world to transform it, but not of it. I don't want to be attached and bonded to it in the way that we've discussed.
So how is your bank different?
Well, Pantera Private Society is a private entity, as I've described. We use another jurisdiction to create another society that is using the original law form. When I described earlier the origin of societies, the liveries and the unions and guilds and fraternities out of the City of London in the 1500s, that English law form was exported throughout the Commonwealth. many independent nations. I'm not going to name the jurisdiction right now. But one of those jurisdictions adopted all that law form and is a valid, a sovereign body, what we call a nation state, and has its own legislative acts and its own banking and interacts with the global banking system. But it has essentially the same components of a private society in a specific legislative act. So we, as the private society that we first created 20 years ago, went and created, in effect, another society for managing banking assets and monetary assets for the society. And as long as we do it privately for the society, it is regulated because it has to interact with the banking system, but it is not, its books and records are not subpoenaable or attachable or attackable unless it's doing something wrong. If it's truly, say, selling drugs, laundering money or something like that. But we operate and live at a very high standard. We don't get involved in that. We understand the law better than almost anybody in the law system, including the IRS and most attorneys and DOJ and so forth. And by understanding the law, it enables us to adhere to and align with the law properly. So part of that strategy is the multi-layering, using multiple entities, multiple jurisdictions, complying with the law and requirement in every jurisdiction that we do that with, and paying tax when it's properly due, but being able to maintain privacy and in many respects anonymity because of the nature of the society structure that we have.
Okay, so is your society not in debt? You don't have any obligations to the debt that the United States has, so you are free from that standpoint.
Yes, we have private debt within, within our relationships with how we've brought capital together.
But that's different.
Yeah, and that's a very important point, because let's go back to the individual. When an individual is operating, as I've described, through the franchise, what do? You go to a bank, you get a bank account. You go to a utility company, you get a service. You do all these things, every one of which is in commerce, and every one of which is actually creating new monetized debt. So you think when you get your electric bill every month that it's just a bill saying you owe $100 and you write a check and you pay for it. What you don't realize is you've made two or three and possibly more forms of debt that you've attached to the name of the franchise that you're the guarantor on. You've just increased your debt load. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why is that? Because there's another layered structure. This gets into trust law and estate law and what is an estate, which is a very big topic. But we all have an underlying estate. That estate has been abandoned and taken control of by the corporation. Okay. That corporation accrues value during the course of our lifetime in that estate. It's virtually the same as when we talk about the landed gentry and the aristocracy, say in England or France. And they had an estate, and that estate was passed to the beneficiary, which was the firstborn male, generation to generation. It's the same thing as what I described as the office of the Pope or the office of the presidency, where assets accrue to the office. There is an office holder that's established by the creation of the office. So the Pope stays there for life. And when he passes, the cardinals come together and they get in this room, they smoke a few, and the smoke goes up and they have a new pope, right? Okay, the office perpetuates. The assets accrued to the office perpetuate. The president of the United States of America, and there's actually two presidencies.
There's two presidencies in the United States?
Yeah.
Well, you need to describe that, because I haven't.
I threw that hook at. I was hoping you'd grab it.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember back to 1783 and 1787, there were two the United States. Well, there was one the United States of America, and there was the United States of America. And the United States of America cognized in the Treaty of Paris in 1783, said that George III, who is a office, a corporation soul that perpetuates. So it's like the king is dead, long live the king. And they always speak in the royal we, because they have a continuity of ancestry that's before, during, and after their lifetime.
So it's the king that is, or the queen now, that is the second president?
No. I'm switching there. I'm just saying that I'm going back to George III.
Okay.
As I described it. It said George III is the prince elector and the arch treasurer. The arch treasurer is the treasury of the Holy Roman Empire, but he was also the treasurer of the United States of America. Okay. Follow the money. You know that. We all have heard that. Follow the money. Okay, so the United States of America constitutionally started as a bankrupt debtor, as I described that debt, and it started as a possession of the crown. Okay, because if you're the arch treasurer and you're the prince elector, you control the money, which means you will control the law, and you can, as the prince elector, you control the land. There's the land and the law where those come in. So that was attached to the Constitution for the United States of America. Remember, I said the United States in Congress assembled was a sovereign body representing the Union. So the preamble is a contract. There are two parties entering that contract. We, the people of the United States, blah, 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 do establish and ordain this Constitution for the United States of America. That was an offer to contract to George III to become the federal entity owned by the crown.
Okay, so who's the second president?
Okay, so the United States, being a party to that contract, is Congress assembled. So in Article 1, it says Congress shall be constituted this way. We'll create a House and a Senate, and this is how they are formed. And the vice president shall be elected by the electors who are standing on the land, as I described, qualified electors. You have to have land. They will elect a president and a vice president. Article 2 starts that says, it says, there shall be a president of the United States of America, which belongs to George III and the crown. Article 1 says the vice president shall be the president of the Congress. Okay, there are two presidents right there. Congress representing the United States and Congress assembled, the Union, and the president of the United States representing the crown per what I described in the Treaty of Paris.
Okay, so the president is under the crown. And they know that. Every president is educated on that when they get into office.
Right. But now that's been all fused and merged. So we just say the United States of America interchangeably. And there's many others. There's at least six or eight United States and the United States of America. We don't have time to get into that.
But can I ask you, when the president gets in the office, are they educated now on you, who they're real, who they need
sure.
to follow, and that they need to take direction from the crown?
They already know it long before they get there, because they've already drank the Kool-Aid. Okay. I mean, look at the last 40 years. We have Bushes, we have Clintons, we have Reagan, who is, you know, Bush Light, and et cetera. They're all part of the same team. They know very well. They know what they're doing. They know what office they're holding and so forth. Trump is kind of straddling both fences, and that's a big discussion. We won't get into that. But yes, they all know, he knows. So as you can tell, this is a very vast and complex puzzle.
There's a lot to it. And you have a different perspective and paradigm on all this stuff, but does your society, your private society, do they have to pay taxes?
No.
Yeah, you don't have to pay tax because you no longer have debt and you're no longer collateral for that debt. So, and the taxes are for that debt purpose, right?
Right. But let's get back to what I was saying, and I'll come up to that. I was talking about an estate, and I shifted to the office, because I describe the office as perpetual. It has office holders that come and go according to the bonding agreement. The same with an estate. So all land ultimately comes from the sovereign, from the crown, from the prince elector who controls the land all the way back to the creation of the Holy Roman Empire in the 800 AD with Charlemagne and this guy named Otto the Great in 962. Okay, so when you follow the history of the Holy Roman Empire, in the 1500s, the emperor was the Spanish king. And they went and created Spanish America. So south of the border from Tijuana to Tierra del Fuego is the Holy Roman Empire through the Spanish line. And then that emperor crown shifted to the English when the Germans took control of the English monarchy in the late 1600s through the Hanoverian line. Okay. And then they created the Bank of England in 1694, and then eventually created the Federal Reserve, and then the central bank system. That's where controlling the exchequer, the office of the exchequer, and the money, and then controlling the land. So the nature and the construction of an estate is hardwired into the whole control of land and money and assets. You know, you go back to the 1600s, you have these big companies, the East India Company and Dutch and English East India Companies. And you have many other companies that were given charter, royal charter to monetize and commercialize the world. Okay. Then they started doing it through nation states, such as the United States of America, as we've described. They're all about creating a state. So an estate is the same as an office. And it holds assets perpetually. And there has to be an office holder, which is called a living beneficiary. Okay, and there's a lot of law and historical acts that establish that. But each one of these entities is a nation state, and it's an estate. That's why we call them states. That's obviously a derivative of the word estate. It's also a derivative of the word status. They all are interrelated. Statute, status, state, estate, they all have the same Latin roots. Okay, they're all about how property is held in this world. When we are born as an estate. The whole construction of our life is put into a legal construction that's also very detailed, but we end up abandoning that estate and agreeing to be the bonded surety to that franchise. That franchise creates another type of an estate, and we operate in commerce through that. And every time we engage commerce, like I said, open a bank account, get a utility bill, what the system is doing is it's taking the underlying value of the estate that accrues and builds real wealth. You've heard of off-book money,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Off-book trading, off-book many things. The public side of the system is where all the debt is, where the containment field is, where the bondage is. But there's always, I'm sure you know, zero-sum ledgering, profit and
there's
loss.
There's like $18 trillion dollars or something that's in the black budget that went to other purposes. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and actually multiples, many multiples more of that. Okay. The way that happens is every time there's something called the public side and the private side. You can see it in a T ledger where you have debits and credits. Okay. The credit is where the value comes from. That's the private. The debit is where the debt comes from. And of course, debit etymologically is also similar and related to the word debt. It's also similar and related to the word death. Okay. Another example of language is we bind and bond ourselves to be able to earn a living, put our ashes into the urn, by agreeing to a mortgage. Okay. So we can have a house that we're going to be the debt servicer on for a long time. Okay. The word mortgage in French comes from the word mort, which means dead, and gage, which means an oath or a pledge. Okay, so we're pledging ourselves to death every time we pay our mortgage payment, which we do indirectly if we're renting because somebody has a mortgage underneath that. So we are constantly debt or death or debit servicing the debt side of that T-bar of debits and credits. How that works is the same as a mortgage. If you own something, it's, you think you own it, but let's say you own it, you have a building, it's worth $1 million. You could go to a bank and pledge it as collateral. It will monetize it in the same way as, you know, our example of selling a car and doing a UCC financing and a secured party and a debtor. And the house is now the collateral, and it'll lend you, it'll create money. It's not really lending it, it's creating it. How it creates it is off of your signature. It takes that application. It goes into the structure of the reorganization since 1933 of the bankruptcy management system, that the receiver of which is the Office of Secretary of the Treasury of the United States, who is a subdivision or a district of the International Monetary Fund, because the that office was pledged as collateral when, as I said, the U.S. joined the U.N. and the IMF and the World Bank. So the Secretary of the Treasury is the receiver of the bankruptcy, is managing the assets and the debts and the liabilities and so forth, and is empowered to monetize them through the reorganization. So when we sign something, a utility application, a mortgage application, whatever, that document by our powerful signature is going to be monetized to the Office of the Secretary, who has access to the underlying value of the estate, just like the building in the example will monetize the mortgage. And that comes out, and that's how money or monetary instruments are created on a daily basis. So when you apply to a utility bill, you are accepting a benefit and a service of the corporation. And every month, it will monetize your usage of energy. And when it sends you a bill, you are actually creating new debt and new money. And on the flip side, underlying bonds are created. Every time someone goes to court, a vast amount of bonds are created. If somebody goes to prison, hundreds of millions and billions of dollars of private debt is created against the public charge. And that debt is traded. It is, you know, off of that trading, it accrues off-book money. All that money goes into the estate because we've abandoned it. The state controls it, and that's where all your off-book money comes from. It's being traded off of your utility bill, your mortgage, all the derivatives, all the certified mortgage obligations, all that stuff, all the prisoners who as bonded surety are warehouse collateral for all that debt that was created. So whether we're in prison or we're running around in our lives, we're all bonded, monetized, and creating off-book money that is funding the black wars and the black ops and building the prison we exist in.
Okay, so one of the things that you're trying to do is create a better society. How many people need to understand what's going on and to be part of this before it can change the world? Fundamentally, not just little parts, but actually can restructure it.
Well, from my point of view, hang on.
We have about 8 minutes, so that's why I want to.
Okay, wrap it up. Well, from my point of view, I believe that we're already doing that. Not just us as a society of, you know, we have about 900 members, of which 400 are active. But we've also created a model and a prototype that's starting to catch on, and we're replicating because we're not hierarchical. When we teach and guide people to create their own societies, they're fully sovereign and independent. But we're in a unity sort of relationship because of all the protections and immunities we've built over 20 years. Nonetheless, we're birthing a new model, a new paradigm.
Well, because I've heard people wanting to create a bunch of these to get us out of the debt that the United States has and to uplift a whole new society, new culture,
exactly.
Get us out of debt and to start over.
Yeah. It ultimately comes back to the individual man or woman to correct their status, which we really didn't have time. Not surprising. We'll have to revisit another time, and I'll explain how status correction works. But it does begin and must emerge from our own living capacity, as living men and women. But we come together as a society on like principles and purpose and all of that. But very diverse too. So we have very strong diversity. Our members are creating their own societies. That is a perfect form. See, the bottom line is that they're not incorporated. As I said, when you go to the SOS, Secretary of State, and you ask for his law and his code statutes to form a corporation, you're bound by that jurisdictional attachment. We create private entities that are unincorporated. We have means and methods to operate in the world to get bank accounts and things like that. But ultimately, for the most part, the private activity is not taxable. But when we enter commerce and we use a multi-layered structure to do that, if we're operating in commerce within the United States and using the benefit of the U.S. system, the income created is taxable and it has to be dealt with. Okay, so it's not like get out of jail free, no taxes. You know, we follow the law in whosever sandbox we are playing.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
If I'm in your sandbox and it's your pail and shovel and ball, I'm going to follow your rules. And that's what it is. But also,
are you still a citizen of the United States then?
Absolutely not. Okay. Because the franchise I described is a U.S. person, which is a corporate entity, which is a citizen. Okay. I'm an American national. I am a Californian, which means that I'm part of that free and independent original state that I choose to establish my private estate upon and operate through and as that private estate. But I'm not a U.S. citizen, because when you do all the things I'm describing by engaging in commerce, getting a driver license, getting a professional license, all these things, by definition in law, if you have a license, that means the thing you are doing is illegal. And you're given a license as a variance to do that by a higher authority. So that becomes a privilege, and that privilege can be given and it can be taken away. That's called civil rights, which are only privileges. They're not substantive, unalienable rights, because you have no standing. Okay. So bottom line is no. We remove attachment to the U.S. person, the U.S. citizen.
Do you also use the word self-determination? Is that what you would call self-determined? Okay.
Yeah. And you know, all these things are hardwired in their systems. The UN has a Charter of Human Rights and talks about self-determination. So, yeah, because the UN is a corporation under the Roman Curia and the Holy See and all the rest that we talked about, doesn't mean that they're not bringing forward important principles that we can adhere to as well as require them to be bound to within the constraints of their own corporate charters or their legal codes and all the rest of it. So remember, we established a treaty of peace. So we operate in peace. We do not allow ourselves to become bonded in commercial process to create debt in the public. And again, when we get into status correction, we'll go into more depth of how that works and why it works.
Okay, so how can people learn more from you and get understanding of, because I could see there'd be more people that would A, want to learn from you, or even B, want to set up their own society and start to perpetuate this kind of concept.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The function of the society, and in our Gemstone University, we have two premium courses. We have a fundamental, what you call an undergraduate education, that teaches all about everything we've talked about, history and law and money mechanics and all of that. And the premium courses are status correction for the personal process and estate structure. So we recognize, as I described, the nature of an estate, the holding of property. So we reproduce it. We create the foundation as a private society. We create an office to hold the assets for the benefit of the society. We write a mission statement, which declares to the world, this is our mission and our purpose. Hence, we become a mission society, which is recognized in the IRS code and so forth. And then that becomes open to total creativity. Any member, two members or more who come together, create a society, can build that society for any purpose. It can be for a healing center, a land-based community, a project, bring forward a new technology. And we teach how to layer and structure so you can be in the world and not say you're free, but you have to hide in a cave and drive a broken up car. It's about building prosperity and capacity, which means wealth and resources, so you can affect and manifest what your intention is. So the office holds the assets to fulfill the mission of the society. That office is the same as the president or the pope. It's a corporation soul of which there is an office holder and a perpetual nature that will perpetuate. As one office holder passes, the next one takes up that office.
But it's not under the crown.
It's not under the crown. It has noticed the crown and the Vatican, the Holy See, that we are not in your jurisdiction. We're at peace. And unless you have fact and capacity and authority to say otherwise, that's who we are. And we've been doing that for since 2002, but really effectively for the last 5 years.
And not worried that at some point they'll essentially declare war and just take you over?
Every document we send out is under the international flag of peace. Everything we communicate discusses.
But that hasn't kept peace, hasn't kept a war from happening in the past, as you know.
No, but it has kept them away from us.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's a whole other subject about how war happens. And let's not go there. We got 4 minutes left.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, where can they find more information about you, since we have very little time? We actually don't even have 4 minutes.
Okay. Our primary website to go to is gemstoneuniversity.org. That's spelled just like the word gemstone, emeralds, rubies, sapphires, and the word university, all one word, gemstoneuniversity.org. And there's a public page with a fair amount of information. There's our master plan of what we intend to build, and we are building, which includes a global media alliance, which I know that our members who introduced us discussed with you, and mm-hmm. we can talk about that another time. It's about coming together as an alliance under the form we're talking about so that we can build the new media properly and peacefully and safely. And so if you go to gemstoneuniversity.org, you will find the master plan about that on the left side. And just above that is an enroll or join now button. It's very simple. You have to become a member because we're by contract. We're a private contract association.
Are the members private?
When they're in our private environment, yes. But most of them are still bonded to their franchises. Some are going through their status process. But you join, you become a member by contract. All constitutions in this country say that the obligation of contract cannot be pierced or impaired. So we have a right to contract. As I said earlier, contract creates the law. We have a right to free association. We have a right to privacy. So we're a private contract association.
So now, do they have to pay to join?
Yes. Yeah. And it's in the form of a donation because we're not in commerce. We're not billing or invoicing or things like that. It's a donation to the society. There's an annual donation for the membership, and then there's a donation for each of the two courses. And from my experience of the last 25 years, the value that's conveyed for that is extraordinary. It's very, very low. And then nobody else has created this where you come together, you have the support, the mutual benefit, and all the things that we have built into the society and the education. So go to Gemstone. If you want to read about Pantera, you want to see all the public notices that I've talked about, you go to Pantera PCA, which is for Private Contract Association, .org. Pantera spelled Pantera, which is a play on words. Pantera is Latin and Spanish for panther or tiger, whatever. So we like that image. It also means pan across, terra, the earth. So it's representative of being universal in scope. And so Pantera Private Contract Association or PanteraPCA.org. You'll see all the notices, all our foundational documents, all the principles that I've talked about. And that's a permanent public notice facility. And then the membership gathers inside the university and all the education's there. And then we have a platform for interactive chat and dialogue. We discuss health and media and emerging new currencies and many other subjects. And we're building a base for the education and the media that we want to bring out. Because ultimately, education is the most transformational tool that we have. Media is the means by which we transmit that education.
Okay, well, excellent. Thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, we're going to have you back to for a few of these issues and some more history lessons. But thank you so much, and I hope you have an amazing day today.
Well, it's already been amazing with you, so thank you, and the same to you. Thank you very much.
So I hope you enjoyed that conversation. That's all we have for today. If you want to find more information on this, you can go to Gemstone University and see all the stuff they have online. You, from what I understand, you can join and then you can get access to all of their reference material. And he has a lot of educational material there. It's a really interesting topic, and I think it's something that more and more people are seriously looking into, and that's why I wanted to cover them and cover this whole subject and figure out what is going on here. Is it possible? Is the history of the United States different than what we really have been taught? And if we're in a bankruptcy and we've been in it for a couple hundred years, why can't we just manage ourselves out of it somehow, just like you would in a normal bankruptcy? You're not in bankruptcy forever. You have a set amount of time, and then you get out of bankruptcy, and then you're on your own again. I would think that instead of being in receivership forever, we'd be able to spin out of that. So that's something else I want to explore, is why are we in this forever? It just doesn't make sense yet. So we'll get into more of that as we go. And for now, I just want to tell everybody to have an amazing day.